Raptors show on Sportsnet.90 The Fan. I'm your host, Wim Liu, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, the man, the myth, the legend, Matt Devlin. What's going on, Matt?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. Great to be in studio with you. Congratulations as well
on
the show.
Thank you.
And all the success, followed your career and a must read, right? The 10 things, all those things. Wow. And so all good and happy for you and Alex.
Thank you. I remember we met in the, I guess still during the offseason when Masai announces a return.
Yeah.
And I think you tried to get me to say where I was going, and I was like, I'm coming on your team, but I couldn't tell you specifically.
I was just happy you were landing someplace, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Anywhere that will have me. But first, we want to talk about you and your career because, definitely that's maybe the aspect that, at least for me personally, I didn't know that much about until I did some research, and I wanted to give a shout-out to Avishai Soul of Raptors Rapture. I think he did an interview with you and sort of profiled your career, and there were a couple of things in there that I thought was really, really interesting because, as it turns out, you might be the Nick Nurse of broadcasting.
I don't know if I'm the Nick Nurse of broadcasting. I think there's a lot of broadcasters out there that paths kind of weave, through different small towns. When I got out of school, someone told me, go to a small town and work your way up. And so that's exactly what I did. And just tried to get better in each spot that I was in, and I was very fortunate to catch a couple of breaks along the way. And I didn't, start in, it's so different, right? Everything was so different then, right? You had big three-quarter tapes, and then it evolved to VHS tapes and all sorts of other, audio cassettes. And, you picked up the phone and called people, and you didn't get voicemail because there wasn't voicemail when I started, right? But you just pretty much went to wherever the opportunity was to call games. And that's, ultimately what I did. And I'm just very fortunate and blessed that it, worked out. And this is my 14th season calling, the Toronto Raptors. And it's been an unbelievable ride. I've been in the NBA for 20 years, and it's been a lot of fun.
That's correct. And we have been very lucky, obviously, to have had you calling all these games. And we'll definitely touch on things, some of the highlights there, the championship. I got a couple of questions on that front. But we got to go all the way back to 1990. First job, KRCB in Abilene, Texas.
Big Country Sports.
Yeah. $5 per hour as the sports anchor reporter. Unfortunately, it hasn't improved much no. in the industry. But
I originally was thinking I want to be a sports anchor. Mm-hmm. And so the first job that I got, I was very fortunate. After I got out of school, I got an internship in Houston, Texas at KTRK with legendary Houston, Texas sportscaster Bob Allen. And I remember going I applied to a lot of jobs. I saved all the rejection letters. They're someplace in a box. And I was able to get the weekend job with KRBC. A gentleman by the name of John Neese hired me. He's now the athletic director at Hardin-Simmons University in Abilene, Texas. And when I went to Abilene, which was about 6 hours, it's pretty much Friday Night Lights, 6 hours from Houston, about 3 hours, roughly 3 hours west of Dallas. It's about an hour from Odessa, Texas, where actually Friday Night Lights is based. And you covered, Friday night football and everything. Bob told me, he said, look, if you really want to be on air, he goes, I know you're going to want to, go to a big market and all that, but stay there, stay there, get better. And that really resonated with me. And then ultimately, it's probably about a year and a half into that job where I thought about doing play-by-play, and I was able to get an internship with the Springfield Cardinals in the Midwest League for a summertime, and I was also doing high school football, high school basketball, just whatever I could do.
Right.
And that ultimately led me to Palm Springs, California, and so many other different jobs in between. I kind of anchored it around a minor league baseball because – it gave me minor league baseball schedule at that time was 142 games. It gave me the opportunity to be on the air all the time and to make mistakes because, as we know, there's never a perfect broadcast. You're going to make mistakes. And you need that time, you know, to get better. And I wasn't that good, you know, early on. And some say I'm not that good right now, but it's, you know, it takes time and pace to develop that. And so I kind of used baseball because it's 142 games and then wrapped that around high school football, basketball, and then college football, basketball, because as we know, you know, college football season is 12 games roughly and college basketball season is 30 games roughly. So I wanted to just be on the air as much as I could. In conjunction with that, when you're at that level, I also sold advertising.
Right.
You know, I also was the radio producer. I also sold tickets. I, you know, pulled, you know, tarp, you know, when it rained. You just did everything you could.
Right.
And then the gift of the job was essentially them saying, oh, yeah, hey, you can go and get your experience on the air.
This is why I made the Nick Nurse comparison, because if you read Nick's book or if you've gotten to know Nick, honestly, if you've heard Nick speak for more than 10 minutes, the British Basketball League will come up.
Yeah.
He'll talk about owning a team at some point to save it from bankruptcy. And he was a shooting coach and handing out flyers and stuff like that. So, I mean, I think that's unfortunately, I think that is the grind that most people have to go through, because, you know, the industry that that you're in, that I am in, it's incredibly competitive, and most people are self-made to get to that point.
Well, it is extremely competitive. I don't know that, you know, I think there's just so many more outlets today. I mean, think about you getting to where you are today. So, you know, the opportunities are there as far as the number of different things that you can do. But I do think from a play-by-play perspective, and I tell this to a lot of aspiring broadcasters that ask me, turn down the sound and call the game. And that is what I used to do. And at that time, of course, it wasn't an iPhone. I actually had a Radio Shack radio cassette and a microphone. And I would turn down, when I was in Southern California, I'd listen to Chick Hearn all the time, and I'd turn down, you know, the Laker games, and then I just call them off of a little TV in the apartment that I lived in. And, you know, those are the sort of things that you do to get better. And then you can be your own critic, right? You know, if it sounds good or if it doesn't sound good. And I would do the same in baseball. I'd sit up in the stands of a game and call it in. People would look around you going, really? You know, and you're like, ground ball to the third baseman. Will Lewis scoops it up, throws it over to first, one away, you know? So you just got to get comfortable with all of that. I will say that basketball, I mean, the energy in the building, there's just so many positive things. When I first started doing basketball, it was really unique because, you know, baseball, you're in a booth. Football, you're in a booth, and nobody's really hearing you.
Right.
But when you're courtside, everybody can hear you. And I'll never forget doing a game. It was a Division II basketball game, Quinnipiac, Bobcats, taking on Pace University. And I was in, I mean, it was one of those many jobs that I've held that you're just getting experience, getting tape, right, to get to the next place. And we're in a basement gym in New York City, and this D2 game is going on. And it was like family and friends night, right? I mean, there was just nobody there but me, the two teams, and maybe 10 other people. And a foul happens early on in the game, and a player goes to the free throw line. And here I am, you know, picked up the foul, going to the line. You know, the Bobcats lead, you know, 5-2 here in the first, you know, half. And everybody, all of a sudden, I'm looking around, and everybody's looking at me because, you know, I'm literally the only voice at this stage you can hear. And it's like you just in that moment, you go right into the golf, you know, voice, like, okay, he's made the first one. Here comes the second, you know. Got to get comfortable with the voice.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's incredible because you're telling these stories. I wouldn't say horror stories. I think you probably look back on some of the things fondly. You go from that to calling the championship. I know I'm skipping, like, probably 20 glorious years of your career there. But, you know, obviously a lot had to happen in between. And when you get to that moment, but I do want to ask you, like, do you still feel, especially for a game of that magnitude and games of that magnitude, because there's so many more people listening and watching, do you feel more nervous almost at times, like for the championship game before game five and six? Yeah. Were you in the mirror beforehand practicing Canada?
The NBA title is yours. Yeah. No, I will say, well, yes and no. You're right. There's a lot of years and a lot of worry along the way.
Yeah.
You know, is it ever going to happen? Somewhere along the line, you know, I think just like Nick, and that's what I really respect about Nick Nurse, is that, you know, that idea of just getting really good with where you are and being the best that you can be where you are, right? It's hard because you're always trying to get to that next level. And so there's a lot of worry and concern. And somewhere along the line, I did make that conscious decision of just get really good at where you are right now. Mm. You know, forget about the next job. You know, take care of this job. So, but it is the first time, I will tell you, that in my career that I ever thought about what I was going to say if it happened. And I was coming out of game five, because as we know, that was just a hectic ending.
Yep.
Right? You have Fred put it on the floor, and maybe if he put it down on the floor one more time, Draymond, who is, you know, kind of hanging right there, yep, maybe doesn't get to the corner and get just a sliver of a piece of the ball when, you know, Kyle went up to shoot it, redirects the shot. And I was down in the parking garage. I'm leaving, actually, with my family. And I see Nick Nurse. And I'm like, oh, coach. And he goes, ah, Maddie, don't worry. We'll get this.
Oh, yeah?
And maybe maybe I was like a fan where I didn't really want to think, you know, that, okay, what's going to happen? But later on that night, it was about 1:30 in the morning, 2 in the morning, we get a text, be at the airport at, I think it was 9 a.m. We're flying out to San Francisco. Game six, as we know, was on that Thursday. So that was the Tuesday morning that we flew out. And I did have 72 hours to really think about it. And I just really thought about that kind of run, the experience that everybody had during that time, even my own personal experience with my family during that time when we became Canadian citizens. And
right,
but there was just so many different, you know, just, I don't know, just different stories we're hearing as broadcasters, right? People gathering,
right
everywhere to watch this.
The Jurassic Parks. Yeah, there was like 200 Jurassic Parks or something.
Yeah,
like
you just, and you have, right? You think back at that time, and you have 2 months of these unbelievable stories with your family, friends, whatever it may be, while you're watching this. Yes, you're covering it, but you're also experiencing, you know, what this whole country was, you know, kind of going through. It's just, you know, magical ride that the Raptors, you know, kind of put us all on. So it was during that time in San Francisco prior to going over, I think game six that day was when I really thought about, okay, how do I put these 2 months into something that was really short, you know, captured the moment, and also you're able to kind of lay out, right, so that people could feel and see the scene. And that's ultimately when I did write down Canada, the NBA title is yours. And then after that, you okay, well, what exactly, you know, what exactly did, right? So it's, you know, the Toronto Raptors are the, you know, 2019 NBA champions. And I also didn't want to say it too early to make it anticlimactic. I really thought about this a long time.
The refs made it anticlimactic. Yeah,
correct. Well, how many games kind of came down to that, right? Like,
yeah,
where it's just kind of like, and so I was like, okay, the rhythm of all this, right? I'm not going to say it until there's zeros on the clock. I thought about that more than anything, and it probably was because of what Nick said on Monday night. And then you're walking around for a couple of days and you're saying to yourself, okay, you know, this is here. This is a moment, and this moment's going to live for a long time. Yeah. Don't mess it up, right? Yeah. And so did I feel a little bit of pressure of that? For sure. I mean, is it different sort of pressure? Yeah, you know. But, you know, in our industry, to get to that point, you want to make sure, you know, that you do the best you can to nail that moment.
Yeah, no, and it's you. I mean, you delivered it flawlessly. It's an iconic line that I think you'll be hearing over and over and over again. You know, I'm sure Kawhi has seen the Kawhi shot, I don't know, maybe a million times. You'll be hearing that call a million times in your lifetime for sure. Because even just hearing you say right now, I'm getting goosebumps. It's like thinking back to that moment. That night of the championship for you, I wanted to ask you, is there one thing that happened that you will always remember from the celebration? And I don't know if you were in the locker room or not, but obviously that was a wild scene. Yeah. And just the culmination of all of that, you must have taken a little bit of time to reflect on just like how awesome it was, you know?
My duties wrapped up and I did go down to the locker room. In Oakland. It was the final game I ever played in Oracle.
That's right.
And I walked through the locker room, Bobby Webster and a lot of other, Raptors were there. And, yeah, you just got sprayed, like, immediately with champagne.
Right. Did you prepare goggles?
Did they give you one? No. I didn't even think. I wasn't even thinking, hey, I'm going to go down into the locker room or whatever. But a couple people, hey, you know, you got to get in the locker room. Or go to the locker room. So I went down there and getting sprayed. And you just see, you know, all the years of all those players and executives in the front office and everything, the coaching staff. And you just, you know, felt good for them. Mm-hmm. All the behind-the-scenes people, right? And obviously the conversations, you know, happened and stuff. And I remember asking Bobby, I said, look at, you know, Rod, Leo, Jack, Chris Bosch, they were still out working. Right. And so I said, do you mind if I grab a 30-pack and bring it out to him? And he's like, nah. And so I grab a 30-pack of Coors Light, and I brought it out to the floor, and they loved it. And
it's a great teammate right
there. Exactly. I was, you know, thinking of them. And went back in the locker room. I think I delivered another 30-pack, if I'm not mistaken. But the thing that I remember from that evening, I also had a Canadian flag with me that was given to me in the locker room. And my family and I had just become Canadian citizens, and that was really cool. So I had that over my shoulder, and we went out to the court at the end of the night. It was Rod, Leo, Jack, and myself. And literally at that point, there might have been 7 people left in the building. Mm. It was that late. And we stood at center. I said, guys, let's go to center court.
Oh, yeah.
And we pulled out the flag.
Right.
And we had someone there say, excuse me, you know, could you take a picture of us? And that was just a really cool moment. Right. And in fact, my wife made that into a picture, and I gave each one of them, you know, framed one of it, because that was kind of special. You're leaving Oracle, everybody's out of the building, and it was just a lot of fun to be there. And then, you know, that night, you know, there's a team party, and you know, just, you know, it was a lot of fun. And then there was a flight out early that next morning, and so we hopped on that to get back here to Toronto. The team, as you know, went to Vegas, and some stayed and came back, and then others went to LA. But it was special. And then, of course, you know, the quick turnaround in the parade, right? And
the parade, yeah.
You're taking me back. These are good memories. You think about that, and then you think about the bubble, and then you think about Tampa, and here we are.
I know. It's kind of weird. It's really weird to be at the very, very top of the mountaintop, and then to have, even the season right after was so enjoyable.
Yeah.
Seeing the pride that team played with, how competitive they were, refused to lose, all the injuries, and for them to not be able to play that in a regular setting, to have to lose home court advantage. I think they had the second best record in the league behind the Lakers. To go down to the bubble. And then, of course, Tampa last year was just was very unfortunate. I think this is probably a question you get a lot, but what's one piece of advice for people listening that want to get into broadcasting or to do what you do? What's that one piece of advice you give them that you think, you know, you would have liked to had at that age, at that time?
Well, I mean, there's, I don't know that there's one thing, because I think it's, you know, I think there's a lot, you know, if, you know, number one, I say this kind of often, you have to be patiently persistent, and it sounds odd, right? Patiently persistent. Well, your timeline may not be others' timeline, right? You're applying for a position, and that just may not be available at that time, right? But you have to be persistent with it, right? You have to stay on top of it. But part of that is persistent persistence in getting better at what you do, the craft of what you do. And so it's so different, you know, like I came through, you know, I first started in TV, but then, you know, that was like a year and a half, and then it was all radio for a long time. And there is an art form, a craft of calling a game on radio, and you can pull back from that, right? You know, from a television perspective. And so I always give the advice of, hey, look, at call any game you can. I mean, it doesn't matter if you want to get into basketball, but call every sport imaginable, because everything that you do, anytime that you get on the air, it's going to be beneficial,
right,
to your ultimate goal. And so just call games. And if that means turning down, you know, the Raptor game so that you can, you know, record it into your iPhone or what have you and go back and listen to it, do that, right? And get as good as you can. And then ultimately, you want to start reaching out to people in the industry, not necessarily on-air people, but those that are decision makers, right, behind the scenes, that, you know, hey, what do you think of this, right? And get their kind of input on how you sound. And there's so many different outlets, as we know, even with Rogers and all the community Rogers stations that they have, and their sports that are on that, right? So, you know, get in and try to do those jobs.
All right, so I have three curveballs for you before we go to break. The first curveball is a relatively soft curveball, I would say. If you could pick one current Raptor to join you in the booth way down the line, click right now, obviously, you're with a former Raptor with Alvin Williams, and you guys sounded great the other night. Which current Raptor would you want to join you in the booth at some future point?
Well, I think it'd be Fred, right?
Fred? He already joined you guys last year, right?
Fred's been on there.
He got bored in Tampa towards the end.
Fred was on with us. I would just, off the top of my head, the first thing I think about is Fred, because I think of how he thinks the game, right? And then also, you know, some fun, you know, that I think that we could have, you know, so I would say Fred.
Yeah, great speaker. Fred VanVleet. To be honest, it feels like he can do any future NBA job.
Well, he could. Yeah, he's going to coach, GM, whatever he wants to do, he'll be able to do. And you know, the whole bet on yourself and just the deep belief in who you are, it's so important, and it's a great message.
All right, the second curveball, I got to ask you about Wale, because, you know, people love – I don't know how often people come up to you and ask questions.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's still happening, but you know, since the Raptors are playing the Washington Wizards tonight, this was my excuse for this. It's the perfect time to revisit that moment.
Yeah.
What happened, and has there been any follow-up, anything like that?
No, there was follow-up right after. So, you know, it was like a Tuesday night game.
Yeah,
right?
A random game.
Random game.
I think he was there to see Rudy Gay.
He was, and our broadcast position is up high in Washington, and I was told that, you know, there was a, you know, local rapper, this local rapper that's, you know, going back and forth with Rudy, and I asked in the commercial break, you know, who is it, and, you know, can I see video, because where I was sitting, I couldn't see him.
Right.
And I said, look, can we take a little bit of time? It's kind of like TV 101. Can we take a little bit of time here so we could do a little bit of research, right? And that wasn't the case, right? We just came back. And so then, you know, this was that kind of at the beginning of social media, right? And so all of a sudden, you know, and we were having fun. I you know, and it was nothing against him. I didn't know at the time who he was. And neither did Leo, right?
Of course.
And so he's texting his sons, okay, yeah, we heard of him. And long story short, Wale came up and we had a conversation. And then after the game, a couple of guys, Rudy, DeMar, who know him, you know, came up and said, oh, don't worry about it. He, you know, it goes, it worked out well. He just, you know, added, I don't know how many thousands of followers, you know, type of thing. And then the next day, you know, we were in touch. I talked to his agent at the time, who I think it was Rich Kleiman, if I'm not mistaken, who is with Clutch Sports now. And so I, you know, just said, hey, look, there is no, you know, disrespect intended or what have you. And we're just kind of having fun. And he's like, yeah, don't worry about it. It's all good. And we're like, hey, look, if he wants to join us on the air the next time we're around, you know, like he can. And that was kind of it, you know. And I guess I was, you know, you know, I think what kind of stands out is the whole Drake comment, right? And of course, you know, Drake is from
Toronto.
Come
on. I think the record.
I'm not going there.
I will go there. Since then, there's been a divergence.
So that was kind of it. It wasn't, you know, obviously it got a ton of attention and, but it was all good. But by the, like, 24 hours later, 48 hours later, it was all good.
Well, there you go. And then the last curveball, we have to play this clip that we found of your rap career, apparently. You know, producer, can we play this clip?
Okay.
Trouble in me. Is the trouble for me? And it's huddle with me. Matt's game day plan.
Yeah, that's not good.
Wow.
That's a lot of mumbling
in
there.
We've got to send that clip
to Wale, actually. Yeah, that's a lot of mumbling right there. That was a couple years back where they were doing a whole game day thing with me, and I was going to pick up my oldest son, Jack, and I was just having fun, you know, with him in the car. And, you know, when I do that sort of stuff, they're always like, Dad, come on.
Right? No. This is a peak dad moment.
Totally. And so, you know, that was pretty funny. As I've said many times, I gave my cool card up when I was at a stoplight in a minivan listening to Drake, and the boys are in the car, and somebody, you know, turned over and said, you know, I had the windows down. They're like, hey, Matt Dela, hey, how you doing? I said, hey, how you doing? Go rocking that minivan, huh? I'm like, yeah, that's me, you know? So I was mumbling and stumbling and having a little bit of fun, and it made for, I'm all about a good laugh. I can laugh at myself. And so as long as, the people in the car that were listening, cause there was three people in the car at the time that were filming it along with my son, as long as they're laughing about it, I thought it was pretty funny.
It was a great moment. All right. I think that's a good spot for us to take a quick five. I've been your host, William Liu, and you're listening to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. When we come back, Matt and I will be joined by Sportsnet's Blake Murphy to talk what would make a successful season for the Toronto Raptors. Welcome back to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Will Liu, and I'm joined by Matt Devlin, and now joined by Sportsnet's Blake Murphy from The Morning Show. Blake, you look less tired than I expected, so that's good. Let's talk about the Raptors, man, and let's go sort of back and forth here. Blake, I want to ask you, for this upcoming season, who is going to be the most important player for the Raptors?
Man, radio has turned you efficient, eh? I get no banter when I come in. I don't even get to ask Matt about how Jack's doing out at Iowa.
Yeah, I know. None of that stuff. We went right down to business because we just wasted like 25 minutes talking about, you know, Matt Devlin and his career.
You guys missed it, though. They played that clip, and then for only Alex and Derek heard it, but I busted out a freestyle in the producer's room. Just the show. Me and Matt could be on a track together.
Absolutely.
At some point.
We can do that.
Listen, I could Skype all these Raptors topics. We know what's going to happen with the Raptors. Can you guys start rapping? No, I'm kidding. Blake, most important player on the Raptors. Come on, you know how this goes.
Yeah, I think it's OG Anunoby. I think, you know, you came on the Fan Morning Show with me yesterday, and we talked a lot about the growth. And, you know, statistically, there's some growth there. You don't really care that much about that in the preseason. Mm-hmm. But looking at what's in his offensive package, you know, that's where, to me, the highest leverage improvement is going to come from. And that's in part because Pascal Siakam's going to miss the start of the year. And in Fred's words, you know, that's the OG's the number one option now. And even if you don't believe that or it doesn't shake out that way in terms of who takes how many field goal attempts, you know, the point is that they need his offense so badly. And then I think even when Siakam's back, you know, we've seen OG and a couple of guys on the team, but OG specifically, take some of these tier jumps each year, where as a rookie, he's a really good defender and can knock down some threes. And then, you know, the Kawhi year was a bit lost because of all the stuff that happened to OG off the court. And then, you know, that third year, it's like, okay, well, now he's an all defense caliber defender and a knockdown 3-point shooter, not just a threat, a knockdown guy. And then last year, it's okay, well, now he's an elite 3-and-D guy who's showing some playmaking chops and some self-creation ability. And each one of those jumps is successively more difficult.
Right.
And they're also successively more valuable when you're trying to build an offensive ecosystem. The more guys you can have that can create for themselves and then, you know, down the OG's got a little bit of this, but down the line create for others, the easier it becomes for, in Nick Nurse's words, the system to create offense. So I think that's the most important swing piece for whether this team's going to be able to score in the half court.
Yeah, I agree. And it was interesting. I was speaking to Nick prior to the start of yesterday's game, and then he talked about it in the post game, and that is the evolution of OG getting to the place where, as we know, we were talking about it in the break, regular season, postseason, very different. Offense gets stagnant in the postseason. You just need a shot, and you need somebody to essentially do it on their own when teams are dialed in defensively. And I think through the first, four games of this preseason, we've seen OG do a little bit of that, right? Specifically from three. You know, it's not running to the corner, catch and shoot. Mm-hmm. It's, okay, I got it. I'm going to, as Alvin talked about, kind of rock you a little bit. Yep. And then bam, knock down the three. And to me, that's really what has been impressive. And then getting a little bit into that mid-range, which, you know, as we know, Kawhi was extremely successful with. And OG, you know, getting there. I think getting to the free throw line was really important. That wasn't something that, you know, is he somebody that can get there 5, 6, 7 times a game? I think depending upon the whistle, he can. He has that. So to your point, I think OG is that guy. And I think that, you know, can you kind of get it going when nobody else can? And we saw some of that with Pascal, right? And I know it leads to some fans being frustrated when he's taking that 15 to 17 foot J that you're kind of breaking off the offense. But, you know, some of that is, as we know with Nick, okay, do it during the regular season. We're kind of trying all this out because we know come postseason that things are going to be different. Mm-hmm. Not maybe different, but they are going to be different, right? And so let's use those 82 games to prepare for those moments.
And what shots are going to be most available to you, right? Correct. Every defense is selling out to protect the rim, and then most of the good ones are trying to run you off the three-point line as well, or at least, you know, force it to a bad shooter late in the clock. And, you know, the talk of, and Seth Partnow actually has a book about this coming out, you know, the death of the mid-range has been a little overstated. It's just become the domain of stars.
Right.
And it's guys who have the ball in their hands and guys who need that as a counter to, hey, we're going to run you off the line. And when you get to the paint, there's going to be extra bodies there. And I don't think OG's there yet. I think a lot of his mid-range stuff is still going to come one-on-one.
I agree.
But it's important to develop, because if he does get to that point, and it's the same thing we talked about with Pascal heading into each of the last two seasons, is you need that as a counter when you're the guy defenses are focusing in on.
Yeah, there's no question. And, you know, speaking of, you know, the three running off the line, right, you know, forcing that extra pass. And when I started in this league, and Alvin and I were talking about this, you know, when he played, you know, teams are taking, 12 threes a game.
And
when somebody ran at you, you would step inside the line and take that long two. Now everybody sidesteps it, right? Yep. So, you know, the importance of running out to touch, you know, compared to just flying. But then sometimes defensively, as we know, you're scrambling so much that it's going to lead to, by the time they make that second or third pass along the perimeter, it leads to you, you know, essentially racing out there and just, you know, flying an arm out. The length is going to be so important this year, right? We've already seen it for the Raptors, but it'll be intriguing.
Yeah. I mean, I thought you guys were going to say Fred, because to me, I don't feel very comfortable with the depth at point guard on this team. Maybe not the most important position, considering the Raptors do want to play that positionless style.
Yeah.
I don't. Who else on the team does what Fred does?
I was going to say, you know who else doesn't seem very confident with the point guard play right now outside of Fred? Nick Nurse.
Yeah.
Oh, fair enough.
But I look, Fred, you know, to me, the thing about Fred's Fred. Like, Fred's going to, you know, Fred said, hey, I'm going to take 9 threes. He took 9.2 threes. You know, shot lights out, took, you know, more shots last year, averaged, you know, a career high. He does what he does so well. You know, defensively, I thought, I don't get a vote anymore, but I thought he was an all-D player. I mean, if he's not an all-D player, who is at the point guard position? Like, I don't know. Is there somebody better with better hands than Fred VanVleet? That's a whole other thing. But to your point, like, is he important? Yes, but you know what you're going to get from him. So that lends me to the thought process of an OG, and then also Pascal and where he is when he comes back. You know, Scotty Barnes has been sensational.
Yeah.
You know, his vision, his willingness to share, right? It's and how much they want to get out and run, right? You're going to be able to do all these things during the regular season. It's if and when they get to the postseason, how certain things may change. It was good, and I know it's late. It was good to see Malachi Flynn make a couple of shots, but he hasn't seemed all that comfortable, interestingly enough, right? Mm-hmm. When he showed late last year that there were some moments where you go, okay, hey, we're seeing something here. But the G League is right there, right? And we all, the three of us, know how important that is, and not having it last year and then the bubble year. And so from the integration of that, I think will be, you know, really important for a lot of players on this team, or some of them.
Yeah, and on the VanVleet point, like you said, he's kind of a known commodity, and I think this is where we get into, okay, OG's season is probably, in my opinion, the most important, but that doesn't mean Fred's not the best player, and I think those are different things, and Fred's importance almost, you know, insists upon itself, kind of. It's just, it's there, and there's not really any way around it, and if he were to get hurt again this year, there's not a... You know, Scotty Barnes is playing a lot of point guard, or Pascal's playing a lot of point guard. So I can't.
And Precious is bringing it up, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's.
And Isak.
I like Bonga.
I think he's going to make the team. I think he's got an edge on, you know, I think they could
Utah
probably,
for sure, right?
Yeah, Utah's in. And then I think it's going to be Bonga and Wainwright. Like, I came in pretty optimistic about Decker, and apparently he shot well in camp, but, you know, you don't get many opportunities, and he was 0-for-4 last night. And you know, his hope would obviously be come in tonight, shoot the lights out, and make it tough between those three guys. But yeah, I think that's the whole idea, is everyone can be a little bit of a point guard. So you don't need, you know,
For sure.
I still think obviously ideally Malachi figures it out.
I do too. Cause I do feel like with the Raptors shifting towards positionless, the guys who are exclusively one position, which is really on this team, very few players. When you're looking at Fred and Malachi, maybe Goran.
Cam.
I guess Cam. Yeah, you're right. Yeah,
that's about it, though.
That's it, though, right? So it's going to be a little hard to sort of adapt to or to play your game when you only get, you know, a very limited number of attempts to do that. I also want to talk about Pascal a little bit, because I feel like, you know, there's been a lot of focus this year on who has been out there. And we've been very excited about Scotty, about OG, you know, other guys, Precious. The one thing I've been watching these games and thinking is, all right, so how is Pascal going to fit into all this? He is going to take probably, you know, 17, 18 shots. He's going to handle the ball. And most importantly, he's going to operate in that post area that we've seen OG take some space there. We've seen Scotty direct a lot of traffic, making some nice passes from that area. We've seen Precious even call his own number in the post a few times. Is that going to be a little bit of a problem, Blake?
No, I don't think so. And I think, you know, first of all, the biggest thing is all of these things are cool to see and important development to see. I still think even if Precious is doing a little bit of that stuff, Barnes is facilitating from the post, OG's scoring 20, like, you still look at what the rotation looks like, and this is a team that's going to struggle to score on the half court still. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think Siakam slides in pretty naturally. And, you know, maybe he's not like the undisputed 1A, and it's more of a 1A, 1B, 1C kind of thing with him, OG, and Fred, if OG's figuring it out. But I think that we saw, you know, last year when Siakam's usage came down and he got to focus a little bit more on being a playmaker for others, that looked pretty good. Like, him at 25, 26% usage and being more of a pass guy looked a lot better than the year prior when he was 28% usage and a little bit of tunnel vision and stuff like that. So obviously he had a very good 2019-2020 and made all NBA and everything. But I thought that, you know, last year he was a more complete player. The three-point shot just wasn't abandoned him.
Yeah.
So I think he fits. And I think this is kind of the idea that they have, and certainly that Nick Nurse has, is just if you have... You know, say Scotty Barnes is very good out of the gate, and I don't think that's fair, but imagine it, and then OG Anunoby takes this step that we're hoping he takes, and then Pascal Siakam comes back, and you also have Fred VanVleet. Whatever happens at the center position, you then have three guys who are kind of positionally ambiguous. They can all handle a little bit. We haven't seen Barnes as a screener yet, but OG and Pascal both have experience screening. Fred has experience screening. Either center would. So suddenly, you know, you don't have really maybe anyone you're comfortable ISOing other than maybe Pascal, but you have all these guys who can do a little bit of everything, and they can do it from multiple spots in the offense. And I think that's kind of the idea. And what you would hope then is that the more of those guys that you have, it's additive. See, you're not dropping Siakam in and he's taking from Barnes and he's taking from Anunoby. It's kind of the more guys that are versatile skill-wise on offense, it should be kind of, sum is more than the whole is more than the sum of its parts kind of thing. There should be some synergy there.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's going to be interesting to watch Pascal come back, right? Because since that season, you have the bubble, right? And then last year, the three-point shooting. I think allowing things to come to him will be extremely important. We're going through this preseason now without Chris Boucher as well, which is more time at the four, right, than at the five from a matchup standpoint. So that adds another element as well. Then Yuta Watanabe, who, you know, that 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes of energy is important. So all of a sudden, and then you had Ken Birch, you know, just returned last night. You have four rotation players, right, and you know, two, you know, one that's, you know, going to be a starter, and then Chris Boucher, who's, you know, more than likely going to be the first guy coming in off the bench. So it's going to be interesting when all this kind of comes back around and works out. And it's to me, there's like some exciting signs of things. And then let's see how, because Nick does a really good job at this, where, okay, guys are coming back in and all this is kind of working itself out, right? And we've seen that, you know, quite a bit, you know, over the last, you know, three seasons, where it just seems like, okay, come back in and things have a way of working themselves out, in part because of the offense and how they want to play defense and all those things. Although Nick did talk about, you know, implementing a little bit more of the half court a little bit earlier than he was thinking, like, okay, we got to get into this half court stuff.
Yeah, I'll just, if I could put my Marlo Stanfield hat on for a second. If Pascal Siakam comes back and we're worrying about where he's going to get his touches, that's one of those good problems to have.
That is a good problem. Yeah. Noah, you're right, actually. And I think the funny thing is what we're seeing from Barnes, and we're getting excited from Barnes, like, oh, wow, he blocked a three. Look how fast he gets out in transition. Look at the defensive ability, a forward who can handle the ball and direct traffic from the post and even get to the rim. And I'm like, you know, you see that from Pascal Siakam every single day.
Oh, totally. And here's the other thing. With Scotty right now, you're not drawing plays up, right?
No.
And we've seen the evolution of Pascal on the block, right? And so you're looking at that area of where he's going to be operating. But you're exactly right. The difference is that, you know, Scotty's a fourth overall selection, right? And Pascal was not, right? Mm-hmm. Pascal was a redshirt at New Mexico State. He was taken late in the draft. And then there was this whole development and then really this launching of him, right? I mean, like, he just took off in the championship year. And then, you know, and we know this from following the team on a day in and day out basis, that it is different. Kawhi leaving is different. And the pressure that you put on yourself, the how teams look at you, right? How they're going to play you. Everything for that following year was really different. And then this whole 18 months in the bubble, like, how it's affected all of us in so many different ways, right? And you come back and the bubble just unfortunately, I mean, look, they go to a game seven. That team had an opportunity to get back, right? Even without Kawhi, right? And certainly to the Eastern Conference Finals, and Pascal struggled, and players go through that, right? It's not, the league isn't like, oh, you did this year, and then the next year, like, this is automatically happening. Four times in the history of the league, has a team gone to a conference finals, lost, then the next year come back, go to the NBA finals, lose, and then in that third year win it all. It's only happened four times. The last time was the Detroit Pistons, right? And everybody talked about that organic growth of Oklahoma City because that's the trend that they were on, right? Oh, we make it to the 2012 NBA Finals after last year losing the conference finals. Now we won it. Now we're in the NBA Finals. Okay, we're all going to come back. Well, that summer, Harden gets traded to Houston, and look at where OKC is today, right? Right. So, you know, there's moments in time. It just doesn't happen like that. That's why you have to, organizationally, why Masai and Bobby have done such a magnificent job of putting themselves in a position where you are always one player away. And does that appear, does that emerge throughout the course of a year? And then you say, okay, hey, let's go. I mean, yep. Think about what's happening right now in Brooklyn, okay, with what Sean Marks came out with today. Like, are we sure, right? Are we sure about Brooklyn? You know, are we sure about Milwaukee? I thought, you know, PJ Tucker was, you know, pretty big piece there. Are we sure, you know, about Miami? Like, it's going to be an interesting year in the East. I'm not saying that the Raptors are in that, you know, top three. I mean, look at Philadelphia. Ben Simmons, I mean, there's storylines all over.
Yeah, well, that's a good place to discuss what we expect from the Raptors in terms of what would constitute a successful season for them. I mean, I want to sort of move aside from the win totals because, you know, whatever, that's health dependent on whatever circumstances. But Blake, if there's one thing that would happen for the Raptors that would constitute a successful season, what would it be?
Yeah, wherever they finish in the seeding, I think the important thing is, you know, are you competitive in a playoff series? And I think that that would show that over the course of these next 82, a guy like Scottie Barnes is coming along. A guy like Gary Trent is finding his way. Mm-hmm. You know, your big three are still able to kind of provide you with a competitive floor. I know after the last couple years, compete in the first round is a weird benchmark for this franchise, but it's kind of where they are as they try to kind of maintain these parallel paths right now where they have a couple guys who are ready to win now and they're trying to build that upside in developmentally. So I think if by the end of the season you can give one of the more established teams in the East a difficult time in a playoff series, I think you're on the right track.
It is extremely difficult to win and develop at the same time in any profession, right? In any league. And the Raptors have done a really good job of it. And you think about Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam. So I believe that they have that opportunity to continue to win and develop. I think that they're always looked at as this underdog, right? I think they embrace it. When you follow the Raptors, this is from a fan perspective, you know, listen to Blake and Will and follow those that are around the team on a daily basis, because all you have to do is read what's happening in Miami, and it's, oh my God, look at Kyle. It's like, okay, he's been doing that for about 7-8 years, and you know, right? So you guys have a really good handle on where this team is, and I think playoffs are definitely there. Mm-hmm. And then to your point, Blake, it's, you know, are you able to get by and that first round, you know, is it a 7-game series? Do you get into the second round? I do not put any of that, like, out of the question. Mm-hmm. I just don't. Yeah. I mean, I've seen it too many times, right? And I've seen, you know, the quote-unquote experts, you know, that aren't around the team on a daily basis where, you know, they say, well, that just can't happen. That's not happening. This isn't happening or whatever. Now, look, you still have Fred VanVleet. You still have OG, right? There is, you know, and Pascal is going to be coming back from a shoulder injury. But there is this intense level of compete that is asked by the head coach and players that bought in from a defensive standpoint.
Well, I was going to ask you guys for one quick, bold prediction. Blake, you got it. Just like a sentence for me.
Sam Decker, 4 threes tonight.
Okay. All right. Matt?
a bold prediction. October 20th, capacity, full sellout. It's going to be awesome.
Drake on the mic.
Drake on the mic. Hey, thankfully he was there last night.
My, yeah, he was the MVP of that game. So that does it for our show today.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Raptor Show on Sportsnet 90. The Fan will be here Monday to Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. Make sure you find The Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe. All our podcasts will be available on your podcast feed. I'm your host, William Liu. Thanks again to Blake Murphy and Matt Devlin. We'll talk to you tomorrow.